One thing that I swore I would never do as I was growing up was be a doctor.
This is Dr. Laura Lambert. She's a surgical oncologist and a professor of surgery and the director of the peritoneal malignancy program at the Huntsman Cancer Institute. And today we're introducing a new kind of episode where we share speeches that have been given at our past summits.
Just before coming up here, I said, you know, I'd be much more comfortable if I could talk about hyperthermic intraperitoneal chemoperfusion for peritoneal carcinomatosis.
Dr. Lambert earned her medical degree from Harvard Medical School and completed her general surgery residency at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center and surgical oncology fellowship at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. She's also board certified in hospice and palliative medicine. And after I listened to this speech, I naturally looked her up and saw that she has 131 five-star ratings. And I, of course, started reading what patients wrote about her, and it was beautiful. One patient said, "The best doctor slash surgeon I've ever had and the best I've heard anyone else of having. Wish every doctor treated their patients like Dr. Lambert does." Someone else shared, "What an exceptional doctor. I felt wholly cared for and in the best of hands. She seems to surround herself with other wonderful people. Her office abounded with them." Another said, "Having a 5-year doctor-patient relationship, I feel as though we're friends. She treats my wife, who is my caregiver and a nurse, with the utmost respect for her knowledge and always asks her for her thoughts and opinions. She gives answers to questions that are hard to tell someone and their loved ones with respect, caring, and understanding. She is the most special of all specialists." And someone else simply shared, "She literally saved my life." This is what all these reviews sound like. And what Dr. Lambert shares with us today is how she fosters those kinds of experiences for her patients by seeing them as people, and how all of us can foster that environment for the people we interact with, whether we're doctors or not, by learning to see all people as people. Welcome to Leading Outward, the Arbinger Institute's podcast, where we explore the tools and ideas we've used for over 45 years to help people solve their toughest leadership and organizational challenges by leading with an outward mindset, seeing people as people.
Please join me in welcoming to the stage Dr. Laura Lambert.
Are there any physicians in the room? A handful. When I was growing up, my father went to medical school much later in life. I was older, and I had a real understanding of how much time and effort he put into becoming a doctor, all the studying, the nights on call, away from family events. And I just thought, there is nothing worth working that hard for. There just isn't. I just couldn't imagine it. And so I majored in German at a small liberal arts college in northern New England, and my life's ambition became to teach German in a small liberal arts college in northern New England. And so the summer before I was preparing to get my PhD in German, my father and my mother, who's a retired operating room nurse, had an opportunity to go to Haiti and to volunteer with a group of surgeons down there. And they invited me to go. Words really just can't describe the experience that I had down there. There's nothing like being thrown into an operating room, and I use that term very loosely, in the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere with no medical background. The poverty was overwhelming. The spirit of the Haitian people was amazing. But what inspired me the most on that trip, even more than the surgeries that were performed by the surgeons that were there, was the way my father took care of the patients. And it wasn't his technical expertise. He spoke no Haitian Creole, none of the patients spoke English, and yet, using just his eyes above his mask and a very calm and gentle voice, he was able to put people at ease as they were preparing for surgery that they really had no idea what they were getting into. And it was in that moment, as I watched him do that, that I said, that's why it was worth it. All that time that he spent at the hospital, all the studying he did, all the nights on call, it was for the privilege of caring for another human being. And it was in that moment that I decided, you know what, I want to be a doctor and I want to be a surgeon. And I want this privilege to be able to care for people. So 5 years later, I was so excited, I finally made it to my surgery rotation as a third-year medical student. And this was really important because I knew I wanted to be a surgeon, and so I was like a sponge and I was working really hard. I had to prove myself to be worthy and capable of being a surgeon. And you know, all these years later, if you were to ask me what I learned on that rotation about anatomy or the indications for surgery or how to take care of people after surgery, I probably don't remember anything that I learned as a medical student, but I remember three things that I learned about being a surgeon and about surgery. And the first one was what we call the ABCs of surgery. And if anybody knows anything about medicine, you probably know that the ABCs usually refer to airway, breathing, and circulation. Those are the three most important things for saving somebody's life. But that's not what they stand for in surgery. In surgery, it stands for accuse, blame, and criticize. And the next thing that I remember the most was that you trust no one and expect sabotage. And the third thing is surgeons may sometimes be wrong, but they are never in doubt. And so they could have just put up a sign that said, "Welcome to the box."
Okay, just quickly popping in because Laura mentions the box a few times in her speech, so I want to explain what that is. At Arbinger, we sometimes refer to having a self-focused inward mindset as being in the box. And when we're in the box or have an inward mindset, we aren't seeing the people around us as people who have needs and hopes just like we do. We might be seeing them as objects who are in our way, vehicles who help us get what we want, or just as irrelevant because they don't help or hinder us, so we don't really even think about them. That's what Laura means when she refers to the box.
And it's no secret that surgeons are notorious for let's call it an inward mindset, right? Certainly Hollywood has benefited from that, as you can see. But the people who haven't benefited from that are the patients. And it was just a few years ago that I was seeing a cancer patient in the clinic. She had to come see me because her chemotherapy catheter had gotten infected and it needed to be removed. And when she came into the clinic, the skin over the site was all red. The catheter was exposed. There was pus coming out of it. It just needed to be removed. So we removed it in the clinic. But because of the extent of the infection, it was not something that I could just close safely. I had to pack the wound with some gauze, and she was going to need to have this dressing changed at least twice a day. And this was on a Friday, so I had to make arrangements for a nurse to come and see her and help with that. And because it was going to be a weekend, I made very explicit instructions about how I wanted this wound managed, and we got that all arranged for her. And then on Monday, I was busy doing a long surgery, and I was tied up in the operating room, and I finally got to check my email. And there was an email from my administrative assistant that said the visiting nurse had called. She had gone to see the patient and she had switched the dressing that you had ordered. And she wants you to know that she's a wound care nurse. And she wants you to call her directly. Now, for a surgeon who's been living in the box for 23 years, this message was not very well received. And I can still recall the conversation that had in my head, and it went something like this. Oh, no, 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 no. I don't know who this woman thinks she is. She may be a wound care nurse, but I am a board-certified general surgeon and a surgical oncologist, and I'm board-certified in hospice and palliative care. I specifically wanted that dressing done a certain way, and the only reason that she's switching it is because she's lazy, and she's only going to have to see the patient 3 times a week. Call her back? What does she think? I'm just sitting around. I have time to make extra phone calls? Oh. It just so happened that I was in the operating room. The resident that I was working with was going into plastic surgery. And so I thought, Well, plastic surgeons know all about wounds, right? So immediately, this young resident who's 2 years out of medical school is a wound care expert. And I go over to her and I say, can you believe, I just got this message and this person wants to use this dressing. Would you ever use this type of dressing in this kind of wound? And she said, no, that would be so stupid. And I'm like, I know, right? And so here I am. Getting an ally from, you know, somebody who's 30 years younger than I am and only 2 years out of medical school. But so, you know, I'll admit I did not call the wound care nurse back. I emailed my administrative assistant and I said, I want to see this patient tomorrow in the clinic. Even though it's not my clinic day, I'm going to see this patient on a day that's not my clinic day. So the patient comes in, you know, I have to admit the wound actually looked really good. It looked really good. And the patient pleaded with me. She said, can we just keep using this new dressing? It's so much less painful, and I only have to change it a couple of times. And I was like, of course. But do you think I was happy about that? No. It was about 4 years ago that I discovered Arbinger after reading Bonds That Make Us Free. And so I just want to put this out there. You know, you really have to be careful about what books you read because they can really change your life. But I read that book, and through that I discovered Arbinger, and I went to my first Arbinger workshop down in Washington, D.C. What really inspired me the most during that workshop was just how foundational the Arbinger principles are to medicine. Simply put, they really define humanism. And when I left that workshop, I went back to work. At the time, I was at the University of Massachusetts, and you know, I just was trying to apply these principles in my own life and in my own clinical practice, and I really just had this burning desire to share it with my students and my colleagues. And so the students I had easier access with, and so I developed a little program that I called the Anatomy of Humanism. And basically what I would do is I would meet with the third year medical students that were rotating through surgery, and we'd meet for an hour once a week. And I would always start the sessions in the same way. I'd ask them, what is humanism? How do you define humanism? And once they got going, we'd start making a list and I'd write it down for them. And ultimately, group after group after group, they all came to the same conclusion. It's about seeing people as people. And from there, we would start to explore what that means. We'd talk about what it means. Is it important? Why is it important? Who does it impact? How does it impact us? What does that look like? And this resonated very deeply with them as they were starting to be involved in the box of medicine and surgery. And invariably, they would always tell me, you know who really needs this are the residents and the faculty that we're working with, you know? And I said, yeah, it's easy to see everybody else's boxes, isn't it? The other place that I really wanted to apply the Arbinger principles was in the perioperative setting. The operating room is really a cesspool of boxes, I got to tell you. We've got operating room nurses, you've got anesthesiologists, you've got surgeons who are all coming together to provide safe surgical care for a patient, and they are often coming together for the first time as a team, sometimes never having worked with each other before. And each group has its own set of rules and policies and its agenda. And as you can imagine, especially when the stakes are high, things can get a little tense at times. And there's also an unspoken hierarchy, and I'll let you guys figure out who thinks they're at the top of that hierarchy. So again, I really wanted to bring it to the perioperative setting. And I won't go into the details, but after about 4 years of handing out numerous copies of Leadership and Self-Deception, talking to numerous leaders in nursing, anesthesia, surgery, and in the C-suite at the hospital, and with a lot of heavy lifting from Arbinger, who actually came and gave two surgical grand rounds. I'm happy to report that at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, they have just recently trained 26 Arbinger facilitators and will be rolling out Arbinger across the perioperative setting, which will cover over 300 people who will get the training across the whole spectrum of the perioperative setting. And so while I'm not there anymore, I'm really excited about what's going to come next, and I know it's going to be good, and I look forward to hearing about that. The inward mindset is a disease that not only affects patients. I mentioned the story about the patient who I saw in the clinic with the wound and how I inconvenienced her with my inward mindset. It's actually been a recent study that came out in the Journal of the American Medical Association, the Surgery Edition, that has shown that surgeons who are reported for unprofessional behavior have a significantly more risk of complications than those who are not. So this inward mindset has real implications for patients, not just, again, not just inconvenience, but real physical implications as well. And in addition to that, that analogy that the inward mindset is a disease, it not only affects the patients, as I've mentioned, but it affects physicians as well. Because when we have an inward mindset and we stop seeing patients as people, we start seeing them as objects. And you'll actually hear that language. Oh, what happened with the gallbladder in room 3? How about the appendix in room 9? I just got another hip from the emergency room. And when we lose sight of our patient's humanity, we lose sight of our own humanity. And we lose sight of the deeper meaning of the work of medicine. And in my opinion, I think that loss of our humanity and loss of that connection to the deeper meaning is what's driving the reports that we're hearing about increased rates of burnout, job dissatisfaction, and depression among physicians. And there are two groups that are particularly vulnerable to this: medical students and residents who are young doctors in training in their chosen field. There have been a number of studies recently that have shown that over 50% of medical students describe experiencing burnout in the first 2 years of medical school. Over 30% meet criteria for substance abuse or addiction and dependence. And over 11% experience suicidal ideation. And the numbers are not much better for residents. This is really, really concerning. I'd like to share one more analogy from surgery. Surgery is an amazing privilege. It's an amazing privilege to be a surgeon, to be able to care for somebody in such a way. But surgery is only possible because the body has the ability to heal itself. If the body couldn't heal itself, we couldn't do the surgeries that we do. As surgeons, after a surgery, there's actually not very much that we do. We provide some IV fluid so a person doesn't get dehydrated. We give some pain medication to keep the person comfortable. We might give some antibiotics to try to prevent an infection. But we're really just optimizing the conditions so that the body can do what it does and heal itself. And when patients ask me, how long is it going to take me to heal from this surgery? They're not usually asking me, how long is it going to take till my incision is watertight so I can take a shower, right? What they're really asking me is, how long is it going to take until I'm actually in a better condition than I was before I had the surgery? So healing, true healing, has a transformative power to make us better than we were before. And I love to share this thought from the physician and author Rachel Remen. I share this with my students and residents all the time. And what she said, or the way I paraphrase it, is that as surgeons and doctors, we fix problems and objects with our knowledge and our skill, but we heal people with who we are. The best part about this power of healing is that we don't need to be a doctor to do it. As I was talking to one of the residents, he was getting close to the end of his training. He confided in me that the motto of the team that he was leading was that we are dead inside. And he was just really waiting to finish the program. He was just trying to survive the program. And I recognized that feeling. I had that similar experience at the end of the 10 years of my training after medical school. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure I can or how I can ever rediscover how it was that I felt when I decided to go into medicine. But thanks in large part to Arbinger, I've come to realize that it's always been there all the time. And that now I consider myself a recovering human being. You don't have to be a doctor to help others heal. You just have to be human. At the beginning, I asked if there were any surgeons or physicians in the room, and a couple of hands went up. So now I want to ask, how many healers are there in the room? And that's how we turn the world outward. Thank you.
I wasn't there when Laura gave this speech, but I've heard from the people who were how everyone in that room raised their hand when she asked that question. Hundreds of people. What a beautiful visual to think about hundreds and thousands and millions of people engaging in the world in such a human, outward way. Now, if you want to understand how you can help your team and organization engage with each other and the work they do in this way, Laura mentions a couple things I want to address. First, she refers to Leadership and Self-Deception, which is one of our best-selling books and is a great next step if you want to take a deeper dive into the ideas that Laura talks about and uses. And the second thing is when Laura mentioned,
at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, they have just recently trained 26 Arbinger facilitators and will be rolling out Arbinger across a perioperative setting, which will cover over 300 people who will get the training across the whole spectrum of the perioperative setting.
And if you're thinking, yes, that is what I need, I need my entire team and organization to be working in this way, then we want to get on a call with you to discuss how to incorporate this into your specific organization. Because incorporating these ideas into a hospital looks very different than a manufacturing floor, which looks different from a school district. So if that's what you're needing, a link to schedule a call is in the show notes, or you can just go to arbinger.com. We're excited to help you scale these ideas within your teams and organization.